then put me on the list after whoever.
Okay, Kathy and Serene and then Sherna.
Okay, I think one of the part of the policy that I think is getting the most frustration from the producers, of course, is the disciplinary aspect
mm-hmm.
of it,
mm-hmm.
where producers are suspended,
mm-hmm.
2 week suspension, and possible loss of a program. And a lot of these disciplinary actions have been taken, but the rules themselves have not really been clearly
mm-hmm.
expressed or disseminated to the producers.
Right.
So they don't really know what's okay and not okay in some instances.
Mm-hmm.
And also because there is, you know, it's such an arduous task to do this work that maybe there needs to be, a different kind of level of discipline, you know, based on the kind of incident. So, for instance, if something happens live, it's a lot harder to prevent than if somebody plays something that's pre-recorded that they had the opportunity to check. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so there should be different levels of the disciplinary actions. And I think that's what the producers need. And there needs to be real clarity on what producers can and can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other problem is that it's creating, like, you know, this, you know, like a chilling effect where people are afraid to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that producers who do health shows are afraid to do programs on sexual health. So, you know, there really needs to be some clarity. And I don't know if that has to come from the lawyer or not, but if we're going to be disciplining and punishing producers, then I think the management level of Pacifica has to be really clear
mm-hmm.
and telling producers what they can and can't do.
Well, okay, and then Serene is next on the stack.
Nathan?
Yes, I can, Nathan.
And
Serene?
Thanks.
And Lisa? Yep.
One of our poets pointed out that words that might be indecent at 1 hour are profane at another,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on how time changes. But the bottom line is that there's been no real education. I mean, we have had some
yep.
sessions locally done by RPD, but this requires a legal expert to come in and actually speak to the producers in an interactive setting
mm-hmm.
where you can ask those
mm-hmm.
questions about things that are very specific to the situation. Simple things like putting out a policy that, first of all, punishes an entire group of producers
mm-hmm.
For the infraction of one person. So if you're looking at a collective that has maybe, you know, let's say there are four teams and they sort of rotate through the month, if one person on 1 week says something that management deems punishable, the entire show, the entire program, not that person, but the entire program, the entire group of people are punished, and group punishment is never acceptable.
Right.
There was supposed to have been discussion, certainly in New York, we were promised that there would be some discussion with the staff and discussion with the unpaid staff organizing committee before the policy was put in place. And when we inquired about the status of those discussions, we were presented a couple of days later with a policy
yep.
into which we'd had no input and certainly no discussion. Simple things like them insisting that if there is a word in a song or a poem, the word has to be completely eliminated and not just bleeped, which means not only are we censoring work,
mm-hmm.
but we're censoring it without notifying the public that it's being censored. Our staff union had sent a letter to the PNB, which I would appreciate if you would forward to everyone else. I don't have the email access tonight, Rob.
I don't have the letter, I don't think, but I'd be happy to circulate it to the body.
Okay, well, I guess I'll send it out tomorrow. It was sent to the PNB last week before
oh,
the
guys okay.
met. But, you know, it sort of brings a lot of these issues to the fore. It just needs to be really thoughtfully considered, and I'd like to say when we get to talk about how the awareness of the fact that we're having these discussions will be brought to individual staff at, you know, at all the stations. I don't know if every staff has a listserv. I don't know how internal communications are handled at each station. But it's important that people really know that there's an opportunity to weigh in on this.
Okay.
Wendy?
Guys, that's fine. We can talk about this. We've got about 15 minutes left. So if everyone could keep their remarks to about a minute. And bear in mind, we don't have to resolve this tonight. And we can even have an informal discussion perhaps next week to discuss what are some of the proposals that we think bear consideration so that we can meet with Craigler as soon as possible to talk about how some provisions can be made in the policy to incorporate these things. But I just want to emphasize we can't solve it all tonight.
I'm next, I think, right?
Yes, Sherna, then Nathan, then Lisa,
then Wendy. Let me just very, very quickly say, and I do hope that we can get through this quickly because we only have 13 minutes left, and as important to me is the call to action issue.
Right.
I totally support both Kathy and Serene. I think but I also have concerns about how draconian it is.
Mm-hmm.
I was particularly troubled by that it was that is, quote, not sufficient to bleep words or flip them to change the sound. That is absolutely going beyond what is necessary under the FCC rules, in my understanding. But the big thing is that there has to be meetings with programmers. It was another kind of diktat that was sent out. And I think that we probably in this committee can all agree that this not be put in place until some program be developed by each of the PDs to discuss this with their programmers, both paid and unpaid.
Okay. Nathan?
Yeah, there's a lot of issues at play in this particular policy. I don't think it's a perfect policy. I'm not sure if there can be such a thing as a perfect policy, especially since things change. And to give you a sense, I think, of where the staff was coming from, and mind you, a lot of this happened before I came on board, but I think my impression is that the staff very much felt the urgent need to get something on paper. Craigler, you know, said in no uncertain terms, it's better to have something, some kind of policy on paper than nothing. And so this is what that is. Training obviously needs to happen. It obviously needs to follow, and that hasn't happened yet. There's a lot of issues that aren't completely clear. I agree with Kathy that there does need to be clarity, but there are certain gray areas where even Craigler doesn't know yet what the example. There are some pending FCC cases that are actually pending right now that will clarify some of those. National staff is working on training stuff, training materials, and figuring out ways to make that happen. I think it's, you know, it's on the plate of staff management, that is. And that's basically what I'm trying to say. It's just that it is really important to have a policy and just to kind of update. You know, this is the policy that's in place now, and you know, I think it is really crucial to have a policy so that if an FCC fine does come up or an FCC complaint does come up, we can at least point to it and we can at least say, yes, we've got this on the books, we're following it, and you know, this is the best we can do, you know, and if something slips out, well, at least we've got this policy and we're following it, and, you know, we understand the ramifications and, you know, FCC, we do everything we can to avoid infractions.
Okay.
So that's the short of what I'm trying to say is that it is important to have something and the disciplinary measures are certainly a bone of contention, but again, there Craigler has said again in pretty much no uncertain terms that just having a written warning is not sufficient at this point. That's, you know, I hate that, but that's what he said.
Okay, thanks. And it's Lisa is next on the stack.
I was going to say, I think we should talk about, in terms of, like Serene alluded to, how do we make sure, because they are supposed to be giving us input to this body, correct, in terms of what they feel about the programming policy, this policy right here. Mm-hmm. And so I think we should talk about how that, how we elicit, how we get feedback from the various producers and programmers on this.
Okay. That's a good idea, and maybe we can schedule something as soon as next week. Wendy is the last on the stack.
I'm going to get on there, too. Please.
Okay. Wendy.
One thing that I'm not sure was brought up on this meeting is that another part of this motion that was brought before the PNB that we're talking about right now is that the fourth part of the motion said, and that the policy will not take effect until all of this stuff happens that we've just talked about right now. And the PNB refused to vote for that. This policy is in effect right now. This is what we pay our managers and our all of our staff to protect our licenses, and that should be our number one job too, as members of board committees and the PNB. You know, this is really important. I don't know where you guys have all been, but when Dan Coughlin sent John Krigler around to all five radio stations 2 years ago, or is it 3 years ago? Otis was the program director at KPFT. We all had this. It was mandatory at our station. I think it was at the other stations, too. Now, I did hear that when they came to WBAI, Don Rojas just had a meet with a very few select staff. But that is not any excuse to say, well, we haven't had any training. We should be putting pressure on all of our program directors to give them what they know. I'm on a million program community radio lists. We talk about this all the time. All the stations in the country are doing this. And the thing with the disciplinary part is that what they're saying in this uncertain time, if you can show that you did take some kind of action, then you might be exempt from it. BAI has two FCC complaints pending against it right now. And so we can't just say, well, no one told us. If I was privileged enough to have a show on Pacifica, I would be finding out, because Pacifica is the most important thing, and I would hate for it to be my little my mistake that ended up losing. You know, if we get one of those $300,000 fines, it could bankrupt any one of our stations. So, look, you know, we're supposed to be protecting the licenses, and we spent all this time on this call tonight talking about when this programming committee couldn't meet. When can't we meet? Well, when can we meet? Because this deadline on this thing is May, which means, you know, the next meeting we have, we're supposed to have this all done. So I'm asking cooperation from everybody instead of saying how we can't do it, because, you know, my friend might
okay,
you know,
point
be
taken.
Disciplined. Thank you.
Okay, can we move the agenda?
Well, no, Dan is the last, and then
well,
we can.
I want to amplify what's just been said. There's nothing more important than for us to do at all of our stations than this. To talk about it as though it's censorship, let me tell you, it is censorship. There's no question about it. It's a stupid policy. On the other hand, that's the policy of the FCC, and the FCC is the regulatory body, and we can easily lose our licenses for something, for instance, that is broadcast nationally on all five of our stations. We can be fined at all five stations an enormous amount of money. So we are a target,
okay.
Obviously. We are the prime target because we created this whole body of law with the seven dirty words broadcast during the day, which was 1977. And we have to have this policy in place. It's just so late. We cannot, you know, it's been in place. And for people to say that we're going to talk about it, we can talk about it, but it's got to be in place, and people have to know that this is not a matter of negotiation. Maybe the discipline is a matter of negotiation. We just, and as far as the points, what Nathan said about sometimes the policy is not clear, that's the whole point of it, it is unclear. There is, it's a terrible policy. It has not been drawn out. But we have to opt to be more restrictive simply because nobody knows. And that's the point of the policy from the FCC's conservative viewpoint.
Okay.
Rob, a point of clarification.
Yes.
I don't think that this is necessarily in complete conformity with the FCC. I don't believe anywhere in the FCC guidelines does it indicate that it's not sufficient to bleep or flip words.
Right, but I mean, we could say lots of things. Like this committee put forward many elements of this in a resolution 2 years ago that nobody was interested in looking at. I think we need to just pass on. Everybody had their say, and let's try to talk a little bit about the call to action issue because we've got about 5 minutes left. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I included information about the call to action issue. This involves. Tella, can you, in a very few words, can you describe? Yes?
I'm so sorry for interrupting you. Can I just say something real quick, I guess as a point of information?
Yes.
Pertaining to the other thing, not to get into a whole long dialogue, but we are supposed to be collecting information. You did mention something about a suggestion about having another call afterwards. We can talk about how we collect that, because that's a very important part of why this motion was passed, to get information and feedback from other people. So we didn't get that part resolved in terms of. You threw out about having possibly another meeting to do that.
I thought it would be good for us to have an informal meeting in which we don't conduct any business, but we discuss ways for us to comply with this particular item, but I think we should do that next week.
Okay, great.
Okay, great.
I want to be clear about that. Okay.
Okay. Now, there was an issue at KPFA regarding a call to action for an anti-war protest, and I included a lot of the backup documentation. Attila, could you give us about a one-minute thumbnail about what happened, and then I'll throw the floor open for comments.
Okay, I'm going to assume that most of the people had read what you had put out there because you put the basic information, including Sasha's letter, including Lem response, including what was sent to Miguel Molina, and this is very similar to the issue before. It's about free speech and how we deal with it. And without really saying much more about what had happened, I'm encouraging, as we have spoken about this, is that there is some clear policy just following FCC regulations and not adding to it and limiting people's free speech. That's really all I want to say because the information is out there and has been in email circulating.
Right, right, and we sent some information out on this before. Sherna, you wanted to say something in regard to this?
Right, I did want to speak to it. I was pretty appalled by the email that was sent to the staff at KPFA. I looked at, after Tilla's email to us, I looked at the FCC guidelines that we're given myself. I saw absolutely nothing that, and in fact, Kriegler, Rob, I'd ask you if you could get an opinion from Kriegler. There's nothing in Kriegler's opinion that, again, would lead to the kind of restrictive recommendations, I'll call it, although it wasn't a recommendation. It was much stronger than that to the KPFA staff. There's absolutely nothing there. What we were told here and what is in our programming guidelines here is that we could say, I could say, the SWANA Collective urges you to join the boycott of the Israeli Philharmonic next Monday outside of Disney Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not a problem. And according to Kriegler's interpretation, that is not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a reason to believe that there might be potential danger. So I think everyone needs to read Kriegler's interpretation, which is considerably more generous, and he's usually extremely conservative in his opinions, I think. And I think which gives us the latitude to do that. So it's as an individual programmer, as an individual, as a guest, we cannot say KPFK urges you to, but we can say as an individual program, I urge you to go to the demonstration, blah, 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 which in fact I believe is what Dennis actually did.
I'd like to get on Stack. It's Bonnie.
Go ahead, Bonnie.
I have worked at every radio station I've worked at, and that is a lot of radio stations, under a policy very similar or identical to this, and we have had this same policy at KPFA since the 80s. This is a reiteration of a policy that has existed for 20-some years at KPFA. Frankly, as a programmer, I am not troubled by being asked not to say, be there, come here, join us, you must. What we work under at KPFA is that we do our absolute best to get the word out about many different kinds of events. I personally think our audience is a smart audience, and that it makes more sense to me to let them make their own decisions as long as we have given them countless announcements about things going on. And this has been discussed in several KPFA staff meetings, and I don't think many people are troubled by it. Speaking personally, I was glad to have the something to remind me.
This is Nathan. Can I jump in also?
Yes, Nathan, and then I think we're going to be pretty much exhausted. Our time is up. So if you could make it quick, I'd appreciate it.
Sure, sure. Kriegler's interpretation does have basically four areas where really, you know, radio stations should watch their speech. In terms of call to action, that is. Obviously, there's FCC payola rules, there's IRS rules if you have a call to action for supporting a political candidate, which this is not, or a call to action about a legislative matter, a bill, you know, call your congressman, tell him to vote yes, whatever, that kind of thing. And then the fourth one, which I think is where this falls in, at least in Sasha's letter, was and in the policy that KPFA has on the books, was stemming out of a liability issue from personal injury, which it comes under what's called duty of care. Kriegler has an explanation of that, which should be in your email inbox. And finally, Kriegler says, I heard a staff member who had a conversation with John Kriegler that to be safe, probably shouldn't have calls to action by a host unless it's authorized by management ahead of time. Something like what Cherna was saying with the collective urges you to go support the boycott at the Israeli Philharmonic next Tuesday or whatever. That's the sort of thing you'd say, hey, you know, Armando, can we do this? And he'll say, sure, why not? That's fine. That totally falls within our duty of care. There's you know, very little risk, I would imagine. But, you know, that's Kriegler's notion anyway. That's what I'm conveying.
But Nathan, let me clarify. He doesn't say that in his opinion here. He does not say that you have to get permission to do it.
He had a conversation, I think, with Sasha about this, but I could be wrong. I'll have to ask.
Unless we're told that, I think that I would not accept that as a programmer unless he specifically says that in a statement.
I would like to stop a moment,
Lisa, and then we really do have to convene. We can talk after we've adjourned about rescheduling. To talk about the other issue, however. But, Lisa, yes, please go ahead.
I just want to say, listening to some of this, I think that some of the things that I'm hearing and the concerns are so just horrible. My personal opinion and draconian. I mean, we know the times that we live in. We are a station, political station. I see nothing at all wrong with it, and I know we have to go according to the laws and all, but people can read into the laws sometimes what reflects their personal opinion, because if a host is on the show and they're saying we're having a demonstration, like with what just happened with the honor situation, and people are like, oh yeah, come on out, and the host says, yeah, come, they need everybody, support it. I don't see anything wrong with that at all, and I don't think that, I think sometimes we have to not fight for the more conservative view, but sometimes for the more progressive view. and to not let ourselves get so boxed into something such as that when a host, and especially since we have PSAs, we have people coming on all the time talking about certain things, that is the purpose of the radio station, so people can hear, so these things can be out there. And if a host says, yes, come on out and support, I just don't see where that, in my opinion, is. And I think that we should, you know, be looking for how to, not how to go, make things a little bit more conservative, because some things are just way too conservative, how to push them forward. But that's my opinion.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Yes, Sarv.
Just one second. I think that...
We've gone over time, however.
Just 1 second and I'll be done.
Okay.
I think it's... I think Nathan Moore here, he summed it up in a very, very nice way, what the real issues are. I think the fourth item that Krigler stated, and this is what he says, if the call to action foreseeably will result in personal injury, the call to action may result in a tort liability under the state law. It is this last form of a call to action that's of concern in the email below. So what he's saying is that, you know, it's that kind of a thing that we have to watch. If we ask somebody to go to this meeting or go to that march, and if somebody gets hurt or something like that, it may cause us, under tort liability, some responsibility.
We're going to have further discussion on this. We cannot conclude this discussion this evening. And since we had agreed that we would adjourn at 10 o'clock, and we're 5 minutes past that.
Thank you.
Move to adjourn.
We're going to adjourn.
Rob?
However, yes, wait a minute. We formally adjourn, but I want to ask those that want to discuss setting up a time to have an informal discussion about the FCC or possibly some other things, but particularly about how we process a responsibility to the PNB on the FCC indecency policy.